I'm Coach Jake, and we're in this series about being salt and light, about Jesus saying you can be making a difference in the people around you. And then he tells us all these different ways to be different, commands us to be different. And the thing we're going to be talking about today, it's something that here in our culture, I think every year you've been alive, every day since you were a kid, there's been this lie that's been put on you and growing in you. And so we're going to spend a chunk of time at the beginning of the service trying to plant something different, a truth that I hope is going to grow in you. And the best tool I have, something that's close to my heart, is storytelling. And so I'm going to tell us a story, and it's going to take a little bit of time. But while we're doing that, I want you to open up to it, okay? You don't have to try to make sense of it, but just let it touch you, okay? This story has roots way back from when I was a little kid. A teacher liked a story I wrote when I was in like third grade or so and sent me to this little workshop for like would-be authors. And I told my wife about it and told her the premise of the story, which I went back and read the original story. It's only like five sentences long, so it kind of had grown in my mind over the years. But when I told it to her, she encouraged me, like, Jake, you have to write that down. And so a few years ago, I wrote down this story. It's meant to be a kid's story. And kids' books, obviously, they come with illustrations, right? And as they should. But I'm not an artist, okay? So you're getting half of it today. I'm going to ask you guys to do the other half of the work. So while I'm reading it, I need you to be making pictures in your imagination, okay? I couldn't do that for you. It would be terrible if I tried. So stick with this story with me and imagine as we go. It's called Shoes. So here it goes. The shoes came home in a crisp box, held tight under the boy's arm. They sat in this box in the closet. The boy came in each day and lifted the lid, pulling back the tissue paper. Mom, can I wear them today? The boy groaned as he carefully tucked the paper back over the shoes and put the lid back on. So you can tell what the mom said, obviously. Until Sunday, Mom said, you can wear your new shoes to church. The boy grinned and threw back the lid. He pulled each shoe out and looked at it from all sides before putting it on. Once he had them laced, he walked in a circle around the toys on the floor and took a couple of small jumps on his toes. I don't know if you remember doing that as a kid. New shoes, that was always like one of my first motions. With a smile, he ran down the hall to get breakfast, because kids run anywhere if they're in a good mood. In the church parking lot, the shoes felt hot pavement for the first time. And if you've gotten lazy on me, remember, you're the one providing the pictures, okay? So keep imagining what this stuff looks like. During the sermon, the boy rubbed his thumb up and down the slick front of the shoes. After church, the boy ran to the car, but he took the long way around the trees and islands to avoid getting in the dirt, which is a big step for a boy to not want to get into the dirt. The shoes stayed in their box under the paper every day that August, except Sundays. One week, they had to stay during church because of a thunderstorm. Then, one Monday morning, the boy came and opened up the closet. He looked tired and grumpy, but a small smile rose as he opened the box and pulled the shoes out. And back when I was a kid, timetable was school started in September. That's kind of the timetable here. That's why he's grumpy. It says the shoes got to go to school. So you kind of picture that happening. In the hallway, the shoes jumped over the lava tiles. The elementary school I went to, I don't know if yours was like this, but it had red and different colored tiles on the floor. You can picture the game, I think, from there, if you could see the picture, you know. At recess, they kicked the game-winning shot, and on the floor of the bus, there were all sorts of new smells. And I'll let your imagination just run with that for a while. David in the very back has got, like, the perfect, like, face. He is imagining it. So when the boy came home, he asked to go outside to play. Mom said, don't wear those new shoes. The boy took off the shoes and tucked them under his bed. For the next week, the shoes were tucked after school each day. After that, they got tossed to the floor by the door. All fall and winter, the boy was careful to keep his shoes out of the rain and snow as much as he could. But when spring started to warm up, the boy ran for every puddle he could find, and the shoes got to splash everywhere. As the school year ended, the shoes were faded and mud-stained. The sole on one shoe was just starting to flap under the front toe. The shoes learned quickly why the boy had been so eager for summer. They spent the days tromping through the woods and into creeks. The nights were a mad dash to catch fireflies and to make it back to base before getting tagged. One Sunday in August, the shoes didn't get to go to church. A few weeks later, school started, but the shoes stayed in the dark closet. But that afternoon, when the boy got home, Mom said, "Change your shoes before going outside." The shoes got to go and climb trees until Mom called out for dinner. The boy seemed bigger every day, and the shoes felt small. On the right side, a hole broke through at the boy's big toe. All fall, the shoes got to have their boldest adventures. They forded the big creek, braked the bike after going down Suicide Hill, and put out a small fire. Then one day, the boy didn't come for the shoes before going outside. The closet door stayed shut. Months later, the boy was searching for his baseball glove. Under a pile of clothing, he found the shoes. The boy picked up the shoes and turned them over. As he looked over the stains and holes, he smiled. The boy showed the shoes to his mom and asked if they could give them to someone with smaller feet. Mom said, "Those old shoes are too wore out for anyone to want. Leave them by the front door and I'll get rid of them." Remember, you're supposed to still be imagining stuff. Help me out on this next one. Someone needs a good picture. The boy looked at the shoes and frowned. He thought back to the trees, recesses, and the creeks. If you're really using your imagination, this is high drama. You've got the front doors in the background, and he's all sad in the foreground. Here's the last page. This isn't a real book, so you can't tell, but here's the last page. It's coming, okay? He set the shoes down by the door. So that's how the story ends. My wife doesn't like how sad it is, you know, so I don't know what your opinion is on that, but which that just makes me feel awkward. I don't know if they're clapping, like, so, like, okay, so story, why did I tell it today? Well, I hadn't even thought of the story in a while when I was reading today's passage. It's praying about how to get this stuff through to you guys, and this story came to my mind. And the reason the story came to my mind is it does a good job of playing on something that a lot of us do in our hearts that then is really a deception, I would say. A lot of us, we have something great, and we attach it to a physical possession. And I literally do it in this. I personify the shoes, right? And I can remember being a little kid and being sad for my shoes, which is kind of weird, like when I got rid of them, you know? And here's the reality, though. If I told you today, because you might be feeling nostalgic about your childhood shoes at this point after reading that story, if I told you today I could magically give you all the shoes you had as a kid growing up, and you could, you know, store them in your basement or put them at the trunk at the foot of your bed or whatever, some of you might be really excited about that. Like, yeah, I want those. That's cool. I don't think a single person in the room would take that if I said you could have that, or you could spend tomorrow, just for 24 hours, living as your 7-year-old self. You could spend a day in boyhood or girlhood. I mean, unless people did some terrible stuff to you, most of us, like, yes, we definitely want a moment of being a kid again, right? Because we see right away, the shoes remind us of childhood, but they're not the really great thing, right? instantly you see, like, this kid doesn't have any shoes, but he still has boyhood, right? Like, the shoes aren't the critical piece, right? Only God can give childhood. Like, that's a gift that nobody can make. Just like we have that little poem, only God can make a tree, and only God can give a lot of amazing gifts. And one of those things is childhood. No one can make a childhood. Just like people can cut down trees, people can destroy other people's childhoods, but nobody can create them. Only God can make that. And it's a great gift from him, right? But we're quick to assume the shoe thing. To assume, like, oh, if I just get the shoes, I'll have the childhood. We know that, right? All of us have thought, if I just get this blender, I'll get healthy, right? If we just get the family vacation to Colorado, all of our issues are going to be solved, right? We're all going to have, it's going to be perfect. We're going to have a great week. We're all going to be connected, right? A lot of us think, if I just get this, I'll have enough time. If I just have that, I'll be a success. I'll get respect, or whatever thing we're really after. There's a couple verses. I want to focus on our main passage today, but these are two passages. If you want to dig deeper in this, Luke chapter 12 and James chapter 1 are great places to go. Highlight from Luke 12, Jesus says in verse 15, watch out. Be on your guard. Like, take care. Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. One of the things Satan gets us on is we don't have somebody else's type of greed, so we think we're not greedy. You know, Patrick Mahomes has like 160 shoes, and so they're like, well, I don't have 160 shoes, so I don't have an issue. There's a lot of different types of greed. Just because you don't struggle with someone else's doesn't mean you don't need to watch out. So Jesus says, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. And then here's a big truth that most of us don't really believe. Jesus says, a man's life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. Most of us, the way we act, we really believe that if we had more, our life would be better. And Jesus is saying, like, the truth is, the good life is not about having a bunch of stuff. Like, we know it up here, but we don't know it in here, right? Take it a step further in James chapter 1, verse 17, I think it's verse 16 and 17. It says, don't be deceived, brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights, who doesn't change like the shifting shadows. What that's saying is every good and perfect gift is from God. We can't make it happen. It's a gift given to us. The wrapping paper is the shoes. The wrapping paper is the car or the whatever. The wrapping paper sometimes is a physical thing, but the real gift is something that God gives. So don't be deceived. Watch out. Because here's the reality, is Satan has these little worms in the water on a hook. And his worm is this possession that looks nice. And the hook is all this terrible stuff he wants to bring into your life, right? But he's watching for that bobber to hit. It's like, what's the thing that he can get you to chase after? Is it that new truck that you can't really afford, and so then you're going to go into debt? And then what you really want is to have a good relationship with your family, but you're stuck, almost a slave to trying to get this debt paid off or stressed about it. So all these different ways can get us hooked into a life that we really don't want because we took a hold of some possession and we won't let go of it. And you might think, oh yeah, that's a lot of other people's problems. But we're going to read a passage here from Jesus. I think now we're set up for it. This passage is going to tell us a lot about what's going on inside of our heart. Okay, so here's Jesus in Matthew 6, starting in verse 19. Jesus says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. We've all bought something and it put a smile on our face for a day or for a week. But then the newness wore off, then it got rusty, then whatever happened, it didn't really last. That's true about any sort of possession that you get on earth. It's not going to really last. Verse 20, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. I do believe in heaven Jesus is going to give us things that reflect back to experiences on earth and things we've done for him. But I also think even right now we can make our treasure these things that will last forever, which the only real things that we have access to right now that last forever is our relationship with God, our relationships with other people. And you can work at those things to turn them into treasures, and they can last. God can make them pull through and last. Verse 21, Jesus is going to get to our hearts. He says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Do not kid yourself on this one. The things you really work for, that's what a treasure is. It's something you strive to get. It's your goal. If you are really working hard at something, it's going to possess your heart. That's what he's saying here. A lot of times we think, I have all this stuff. I own all of this. I saw somebody's little, like, Venom can of energy, whatever, and said, own it for 99 cents. I just tell you, that's a weird, like, yep, own it, you know, like no payments or anything like this, like, own it. Because there's this desire in us to own, right? And we think, I own it, it serves me. There's a lot of the stuff that we own owns us, right? You wind up serving it, maintaining it, stressing about it, consumed with it. This is a picture that you could just put in your mind and think about tomorrow. These ladies, I mean, there's nothing wrong with these ladies, but these ladies have chosen to carry these cinder blocks. There's not a lot else they can do while they're carrying the cinder blocks. Their daughter comes up and wants to play. Can't really play house or whatever, like while you've got these three cinder blocks on your head, right? As long as you want to carry those blocks, there's not a lot of other things you could do. You can't go for a peaceful walk. You can't have a romantic dinner. You can't just sit down and enjoy the sunset or something. You know, I mean, you're pretty much, you're carrying those blocks. That's the main thing you're doing. A lot of us have thought, I could do this. I could own this. I could buy this. I could stand on something and then, like, get this up. And if I take out some loans, some other people could put some stuff on me. I wouldn't be able to get on my own. And then we wonder, like, why is life so hard and we're so stressed? And why can't we treat other people the way we want to treat them? And why don't we have enough time for the things that we really value? And for many of us, we'd have a lot better shot at enjoying the good and perfect gifts that God wants to give us if we had less. The trick that we keep falling for is the next thing you buy is going to fix your problems. And I think we've done that enough to realize that's a lie. And if you have a bunch of cinder blocks on your head, maybe it's time to start figuring out which ones to set down and how to set them down rather than the next one you're going to buy. Let's read a little further. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. Kind of a confusing verse, right? Verse 23 is also hard to understand. For if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. The light within you is darkness. How great is that darkness? First, it sounds like Jesus is talking about something totally different. Like we're talking about money and possessions, and then verse 24, if you're looking ahead, he's going to go back to money. It's like, what is 22 and 23 about? One of the benefits, if you bring your Bible with you and you're actually reading it in your text instead of just on the screen, is you see that little A and that little B, or whatever letters it is in the actual text for you. That's a note from the translators. I would always recommend, like, look at the bottom of the page and read it. Because what that, English is not a perfect language. I like English, obviously, but, like, you can't translate perfectly. And so when they have these little footnotes, it's because the people doing the translation, they know, like, you really can't put this into English very well. So let me write a little note about how to make this make more sense. So in the Greek, if you look at your footnotes, it'll say, like, the connotation here about healthy and unhealthy, it also carries with it the idea of generous and stingy. And it starts to then make sense how this ties into the other parts that Jesus is saying. So let's reread it that way. It says, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are generous, your whole body will be full of light. Imagine if you went through life this week, and when it came to possessions, instead of what can I get, your thought was, I have a lot, how can I give? It's saying if you have this attitude of I have plenty and I want to share, then your whole inside condition is going to be full of light. Don't miss this. This is the heart of what we're talking about today. Every week, we either have a generous outlook or we have a stingy outlook. And Jesus is saying, if you want to live full of light, if you want to be a light, you've got to have a generous mindset. There's a lot of people who obey the rules on the outside, but on the inside, their inside condition is not full of light. Because they're thinking about, what do I have to do instead of what do I get to give? Even when we pass the offering plate around this morning, the reason we do that as part of our worship service is because giving to God, participating in what's happening here in Maywood financially, that can be an act of worship. It can be saying, God, I trust you with my finances. I feel provided for, and I want to give to this cause. Okay, and it's not just here at Maywood. Giving to somebody who's poor that you run into, or giving to some other cause where you say, God's given me plenty, plenty so much that I can share with other people. I'm not afraid. I'm not storing up more treasure for me, but I have enough to share. That's a mindset, okay? That's the way you see the world, because the facts are all of us have enough food to make it through to next week. I was reading about fasting a little bit this last week because we talked about fasting. I'd only ever heard about people fasting. First service didn't get this. This is a weird spot, but I'd only ever heard about people fasting like 40 days. It's like an extreme amount of time. Some guy in Europe with like medical supervision who was very obese, he fasted for like literally a year. Only had coffee, tea, just tea, like no calories in it, and water for a year, and like got down to like 190 pounds and like was healthy the whole time, like medically supervised. And the reason was he had so much surplus of calories he didn't need to eat anymore, and he was fine. And the reality is, for a lot of us, none of us, from a financial standpoint, all of us have something we could share. We trick ourselves. It's our outlook that says we don't. It's our outlook that's stingy. All of us could be generous this week. I'm not saying an amount you have to give or a way you have to give. But imagine, maybe you don't like giving money to homeless people. Well, think about it. The reality is you're going to run into someone homeless, probably even the next week. If you had a generous outlook, you'd be thinking, how could I give? What's a way that I could have a smile on my face and be generous? If you don't like giving money, go talk to somebody around here who's been homeless and say, when you were homeless, what was something good that someone did for you? And then go do that same thing for somebody else. Find some way that you can enjoy being generous. Here's the next verse. But if your eyes are stingy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If that, then that light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? If you have the outlook, what do I have to do? Then you're doing it wrong. Don't go away from today's sermon feeling guilty, because that's the stingy outlook. The stingy outlook is, what do I have to do? People who succeed with Jesus, they realize all that stuff we were singing about. Jesus has been so good to me, and I get to be good to other people. If what you can start with today seems really small, that's okay. But start with a generous outlook of like, I'm excited to give in this way. Don't walk out of here with a stingy like, oh, I get Jake preached about possessions. I guess I have to do this. Because people, it'll come through. Find some way that you can be generous and want to be generous. I talked quite a bit. I've already hit us with a lot. I hit us with a lot of flowery stuff too. Jesus just like comes at people fast with a lot. And he's not done yet. Okay, so we got one more verse, and it's heavy hitting from Jesus. He says in verse 24, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other." Listen to this. "You cannot serve both God and money." If someone showed up with you with a pitchfork out here on Winter Road, and you know, little horns, and they said, "This week, you know, Ernie, do you want to serve money or do you want to serve Jesus?" Ernie would pick the right thing. Everybody would pick the right thing, right? We'd all be like, okay, I know what's right. Satan doesn't like coming on things straight on because he knows he'll lose that. So he tricks us. How does he trick us here? A lot of times he tricks us by getting us to think that money is something that's going to serve us. And that God, a lot of us, if we're really honest about it, it's about what can God do for me. And so we come at both God and money about they're going to help me, and that's how he gets us all tripped up. There's no option, there's no third option from Jesus here about like be the master of money. A lot of us like to tell ourselves like, oh yeah, I'm going to change the way I feel about money. Jesus is saying like you can't do it. You can't serve both God and money. You're going to serve one of them, is what he's getting at there. If you don't choose to be generous for Jesus, then you're choosing to be a slave to money. And real quick on the despised and devoted, just to hit this with a quick analogy, you know, Chrissy made taco salad the other night, and Kariana, our little 2.5-year-old, she hates tomatoes, and garden fresh tomatoes doesn't matter. She hates them all. She despises them. And so even though she really likes taco salad and you mix some tomatoes in there with melted cheese and everything else in there, she picks them all out. I wound up eating like this little like handful of tomatoes that she had picked out because they were still good, I thought. But she despises them. So you couldn't trick her. She picked it all out, right? Jesus is saying we should despise money and be devoted to God. But most of us have an easy time being devoted to money. This is the last analogy I want to leave you with. When I'm, as a pastor, I get to perform a lot of wedding ceremonies, officiate them, and my favorite part about weddings is, as the pastor, I get a view that no one else in the room gets. And it's my favorite part of the ceremony anyways, but it's much better in the pastor view. And that's when couples give vows to each other, everybody hears that, but I get this perspective that no one else gets. I mean, not quite exactly that angle. That's the groom, maybe. But like, but I get that angle of I can see their eyes. No one else can really do that. You might hear them. You hear like the snuffling of like the crying as they're trying to read it or repeat it. But I get to see this like well of devotion that's there. It's a really beautiful moment. And the aspiration at that point of the wedding day is that we're going to do all these things, you know, till death do us part. And no couple is perfect, and some couples totally fail at their vows. It's hard to live up to those, even the traditional vows, very hard to live up to. This is a weird twist on the traditional vows, but when I was thinking about what does it mean to be devoted to money, the reality is if you look at our traditional wedding vows, most of us have a very easy time doing those things for money. And it would be sick to have like this like teary-eyed look at money and say, these are the ways I promise to be faithful to you. It'd be gross, right? But let me read these vows and think about your own life. "I take you, money, to be my partner," you know, husband or wife, "to have and to hold from this day forward." Think about that. Most of us will not rest until we have some money close to us, right? Right? Way more disturbed than if our spouse is not near us, right? If there's no money to our name, no access to money. "For better or for worse," I've never seen somebody that's like, oh, I'm having a great day, like I have no concern about money at all. Like, maybe I've seen it, but it's rare, right? On great days, people want more money. On bad days, they want more money. There's a devotion there, right? For richer or for poorer, this is the most sick one. I mean, this is how you see that money can't be fulfilling. Because, okay, yeah, people are poor, they really think about money, they want money. When people are rich, it's pretty rare to find a rich person who's like, yeah, I've got enough. I'm not really trying to get any more. I've got, you know, I was working real hard to get that raise, and I got a raise, and I realized, like, I don't want any more money than this. Like, I'm just going to turn down raises from here on out. And, you know, like, I've never seen somebody like that. I've seen a lot of people, maybe not never, but it's not common. I've seen a lot of people take jobs they don't like, work hours, sacrifice in ways they don't want to, all for the sake of getting more. But there's never this satisfaction point. If something never satisfies you, like maybe you should take a hard look at your involvement with it. Like that's the stuff that addictions are made out of. I always want more, 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 but I'm never content. In sickness and in health. Sick people, if you're really sick, you probably would be willing, I'll give up all the money I have to be healthy. But talk to somebody that's healthy. Most of those people do not walk around like, oh, I don't need money, you know, or like, I'm so thankful for my health, I'm not worried about money, right? Whether we're sick or we're healthy, we're still pretty devoted to money, to love and to cherish till death do us part. It's a lot of our attitudes with money. I need a whole lot of it until I die. When I'm die, okay, like, fine, other people can have it. But until I die, like, no. Maybe I'm even going to hold the inheritance over my few other people. We talked about a lot of stuff today. It's kind of depressing at times to think about this stuff because there's some ugly stuff inside of us, right? If you're willing to look at the ugly stuff inside of you with Jesus, though, it's not a depressing thing. Because Jesus doesn't look at any person in here and feel disgusted. Jesus looks at you and he sees potential. He sees that you could be his sister, you could be his brother, that if you'll hand over the keys, he'll make you into this person that stands shoulder to shoulder with him. He's not ashamed to call you a family member. Like when it comes to this stuff, like he's saying, I want you to be generous like I'm generous. I want you to meet people and think, how can I help that person, not what can I get from that person. I want your thoughts about money this week to be, what can I let go of so I can be generous with someone else? Because you start letting go of stuff, God starts filling your hands, okay? And the good and perfect things all come from God. We don't manufacture them ourselves. So we want to open up to those good and perfect gifts. We can't do this alone. We need God's help, and that's what prayer is about. So Daniel's going to come up with the team. They're going to lead us in one song. I know we went just a touch over today, but they're going to lead us in one song. We've got some small group folks down here. If you're a small group leader or one of our coaches or a wife of one of our coaches, if you guys would come up front, if you want to pray today, don't hesitate. Come down and pray. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you that you are so generous to us, and then that we just get to respond, and we just get to copy you and be generous to other people. I trust you to take care of me. Help me to be generous this week. It's in your name we pray. Amen.